You are listening to the Nirvana Podcast, bonus episode 7, Kurt Cobain's Effect Pedals. Hello everybody, welcome to a special bonus episode of the Nirvana Podcast. I'm your host, Sietse, and this time I'm flying solo since Jiditja is not joining me today. But I don't feel very alone because I'm joined by my guitar. I've got my guitar on my lap and I've plugged in a bunch of effect pedals, and I'm going to walk you through the history of Kurt Cobain's guitar pedals in a more or less chronological order. What did he use? How did it shape his sound and stuff like that? This episode isn't meant to be like a hyper detailed breakdown of every tiny tonal nuance. And it's definitely not about perfectly recreating every sound. There's other people doing that way better than me. And I love to watch their videos on YouTube, but they can be quite nerdy and going into details. And I want you to think of this episode as a beginner's guide to the effect pedals in general, and especially the ones that helped shape Nirvana's sound. So let's dive in. First off, let's talk about what is an effect pedal. Simply put, it's a small device, a little box that you connect between your guitar and your amplifier. And it's going to change the sound in some way. You can usually switch them on and off by foot. So if you hit them, if you stomp on it, the sound will change. And how it changes, it all depends on the pedal you're using. You've got tons of different ones, and I'm going to showcase just a couple of those. Of course, pedals are just like one piece of the puzzle. The guitar itself, the amp, how the amp is mic'd, how you play it, how the guitar is mixed in the studio, what kind of trickery is done there. All of that matters and plays a role in the final sound you hear on a record or on a live show even. But pedals are a lot of where the magic happens. Of course, nowadays you can do pretty much everything digital, but personally I really like to hold those like old school stomp boxes and tweak the knobs and hold them, look at them. Some of them have really nice artwork on it. So that's what I like. I've collected quite a few Kurt Cobain or Kurt Cobain-ish pedals, and I'm going to showcase them in this episode. So let's start with Kurt Cobain's first effect pedal. It was a Unifox Super Fuzz, which is like a gnarly, aggressive fuzz pedal. I think it's originated from the 1970s. And now I don't have the exact pedal that Kurt had. Those Unifox Super Fuzz pedals are quite rare and expensive these days. I've got a very, very cheap one, but I think it serves the purpose for just to show like how that changes the sound of guitar. So here's the guitar without the effect. And now I'm going to switch it on. As you can hear, the fuzz is pretty extreme, and you can hear kind of this guitar sound on Kurt's first demos that he did. It's a bit chaotic, crunchy, nasty sound, but eventually Kurt's fuzz pedal broke, and that was that. Much later, his guitar tech actually built him a clone of that pedal, which is like a replica that mimics the original pedal. After his Super Fuzz died, Kurt moved on to something more, a little bit more accessible, the Boss DS1, which is a distortion pedal. If you close your eyes and you try to see a picture of a effect pedal, there's a good chance that you're actually picturing the DS1 because it's very famous. It's used by a lot of people. It's a bright orange little box. I think a lot of its fame has to do with Kurt Cobain, but tons of other musicians have used it as well. It's known for its raw cutting tone, and it became like a defining sound of Nirvana's debut Bleach. It's all over that album. I'm going to demonstrate a little bit how that effect box sounds. Here's the fuzz again. And here's the distortion. Of course, all these boxes have some knobs on them, so you can tweak them and you can get very different sounds from the same effect box, but this is just how I set them up. So, like I said, it's the main effect on Bleach. It's pretty much the only effect that they used, and you can hear it on a lot of different songs. I'm just gonna play a couple of parts from that. Yeah, of course, this is not the exact Bleach guitar sound, but I hope you recognize it just a little bit. There are a few other pedals that Kurt used. I think in the noise break on Love Buzz, you can hear somewhat of a wah-wah sound, but that's like a really big exception. Here's a last example of it. Oh, forgot to switch it on. As you can hear, it's not very diverse, but it has that really old school rocking sound to it. Now, for recording the second album, Nevermind, Nirvana had access to much more studio equipment. They had a decent budget, but interestingly enough, Kurt didn't radically change his setup. He upgraded from the Boss DS1 to the Boss DS2, which is its successor, but the DS2 has two modes, and one of them is basically a DS1 sound, and that's the one that he used. So I think basically nothing radically changed, but he did add a small clone chorus pedal to the mix. It's an effect pedal made by the company Electro Harmonix, and it's what gives that watery, warbly sound effect. And you can hear that on several tracks on Nevermind, most notably on Come As You Are. Here's the Come As You Are riff without any effects. And now I switch it on. And that had a lot of impact on Nirvana's sound. Also because the effect is used on three of the four leading hit singles from the album. You can hear it on In Bloom as well. You can hear it on Smells Like Teen Spirit 2 for like the two-note melody in the verses. And what Kurt liked to do is combine the chorus effect and the distortion effect. So
¶¶
and so on. He also used that on the solo. On there. So that's, I think, the two cornerstones of the Nevermind guitar sound. Still the bass distortion pedal, and sometimes combined with the small clone chorus. Of course, there's a lot of other stuff going on. For instance, on Lithium, Kurt used a different effect box for some of the other tracks as well. He sometimes borrowed some by Butch Vig, who also liked to layer the guitar tracks to create like a bigger, denser sound. In a documentary about Nevermind, Butch actually explains how he stacked different guitar takes with different effects to get that like a huge wall of sound. I think he said that Drain You has the most layers of different guitar tracks, and he showcases them separately, and then he combines them, and then you hear that very recognizable sound. Of course, live, they didn't get to use that, so Kurt mostly stuck with what he knew, which was the DS2 and the small clone pedal. So that's how he could reproduce that guitar sound on stage. So let's move on to the third album, In Utero. He made some changes there. Kurt moved away from that classic bass distortion and started using a Sense Amp Classic. It's technically an amp simulator with tons of knobs and switches, but Kurt used it mainly as a distortion box, both live and in the studio. So here's what that sounds like. So to hit a difference, here's the Boss DS2. And here's the Sense Amp. I hope you can hear the difference. And like I said, you could always make them sound differently, but this is how I play them. Those Sense Amp pedals are very popular. There's been a couple of reissues at the moment. They are a bit expensive, but if you look for them online, you can still find them. But they're not as easy to find and not as cheap as those Boss pedals I mentioned earlier. That was like a change of sound for Kurt. Also, instead of using the small clone chorus pedal, he began to use a poly chorus, also made by the Electro Harmonics company. It's also known as an echo flanger. And that's a bit more of a complex pedal with multiple modes. So you have a different option, and Kurt used some of those. I don't have an original a poly chorus or a echo flanger, but I've got a clone of it that in my ears does the job just fine. Let's check out a radio-friendly unit shifter. That intro noise is a combination of the Sense Amp distortion and the poly chorus in full effect. Something like that. Recreating that sound is a bit of a challenge and a bit of a quest for some people online. If you look on YouTube for videos, you could find several people trying to recreate that exact sound, which is pretty hard to do. Mine isn't perfect. I'm well aware of that. But I think it's close enough. If you listen to live shows where usually they opened with this sound before kicking in the first song of Nirvana themselves, it sounds not exactly the same as on the album. So the band has never been about being perfect or recreating everything exactly the way it is in the studio, live on stage. So I think, there's a bit of room to wiggle there. But there are several things you can do with the echo flanger. And let's hear what happens if Kurt combines the echo flanger and the sense amp on Scentless Apprentice. Here's just the sense amp. But he uses the so-called slapback mode of the echo flanger, which provides sort of a echo sound, and it sounds like this. And it's also in the verses. I hope you could spot it in there, and in the other bridge, and in an other part, you can hear the slapback effect combined with the sense amp as well. Okay, I didn't play that perfectly, but I hope you get the idea. Now, there's one very mysterious pedal that's been used on the In Utero album, and it's on the solo of Heart-Shaped Box. Now, this is an interesting and fascinating story, at least, that I think is like a big mystery. Especially in early versions of the track, there is a strange, searing tone that fans couldn't quite identify. In the final version of the song, there's a more straightforward version of the solo, because Chris Novoselic apparently absolutely hated what they did the first time. It's been released on a box set with the original Steve Albini mixes. And the story here is that nobody knew exactly what it was for years, what they did to it. Then YouTuber Aaron Rash, who has done some of the most accurate recreations of Nirvana tone, tracked down the original builder. And that was a friend of producer Steve Albini, who handmade the pedal. So there was just one in existence. So Aaron Rash tracked the guy down and convinced him to build him a second version of that pedal, the so-called Pedal X. He demonstrated it briefly in one of his videos. And nowadays, there's even a small American web shop called Nerdvana that builds sort of a replica Nirvana pedals. And they had their own take on this pedal called the X pedal. They don't claim it's an exact clone of it, but it's getting you close. And thanks to Yaditya in Canada and a Dutch friend who was visiting her, I managed to get my hands on one. And I'm probably one of the few people in Europe, maybe even the only one in the Netherlands who owns one. So I'm a little bit proud of that. And this is how it sounds playing the Heart-Shaped Box solo. Yeah, and especially in the final chord, you can hear what it does. This is without the X pedal. And this is with the X pedal. So it sounds a bit like an extreme tremolo effect or something like that. So that brings me to the end of my little monologue about Kurt's pedals. My conclusion is that Kurt Cobain used what he had. And in the early days, that wasn't much. Just a fuzz pedal, and later a simple distortion box. As his career took off, the options expanded, bigger studios, better budgets, more gear. Still, he didn't turn into like a pedalboard obsessive or anything like that. But he liked to experiment. A great example of that is the B-side Curmudgeon, where he used a heavy phaser effect. I don't have one of those, so I can't demonstrate that. But if you listen to Curmudgeon, it's very, very, very noticeable. So you can't miss it. And that's not something that you hear very often in Nirvana's catalog. So he liked to just have a go and see what happened. But even with those experiments, Kurt's main setup remained always relatively simple. One or two distortion effects. I think even after he added the Sansamp to his collection, he kept using the bass distortion as well. Maybe one or two modulation effect, like the chorus. Yeah, that's all he needed, whether it was Bleach, Nevermind, or even In Utero. I think Kurt knew how to do a lot with very little. And I think that sets him apart as an artist. So that wraps up this bonus episode of the Nirvana podcast. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We're not on social media anymore, but if you want to reach out, you can email us at sherwoodpodcast@gmail.com. We've gotten a few messages from listeners asking us to talk about the Nirvana reunion shows, like that performance with Post Malone for the Saturday Night Live anniversary. And who knows, maybe we'll cover that in a future episode. Be sure to subscribe so you'll be the first to know when a new episode drops. As you know, we don't make any promises anymore, and you can always go back to our old episodes. We've covered a lot of ground already. And now to close it off, I'll just play us out with a few Nirvana tracks just for fun. So again, thanks for listening, and talk to you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.